You are listening to Fanther Tracks.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
That's not true. That's impossible.
You're listening to episode 56 of Making Tracks, brought to you by the fine folk over at fanthetracks.com. My name's Mark Mulcaster, I'm one of your co-hosts, and today I'm joined, as always, by the man who shares my hairbrush, Mr. Mark Newbold.
I wondered where all that hair came from. You know, some days you check things, you check around, and it's like, that's not my hair. So now that answers a lot. Don't check your toothbrush, okay. Don't check your toothbrush.
Okay, I apologise, it's actually a James Bond reference. I put you down quite heavily last week, I gave you the legs of L337.
No, but I actually accepted that because I'm fully aware that I walk around on tree trunks and always have. So I took that one.
I think it was wiggling my hips more than anything. That droid's got some serious gait going on in Solo. Anyhow, how's your week in Star Wars been, my friend?
It's been busy. I mean, last week we had two episodes of the show out because we had so much to talk about last week. We couldn't fit it into one show. So that was one of those rare weeks when not rare during the pandemic, but sort of increasingly rare since things have sort of started to get back to, inverted commas, some kind of normal. Though how long that'll last, who knows? Loads to talk about of what's been happening this past week. Obviously, Hasbro PulseCon, which has happened over Friday and Saturday just gone, and Billy Lord's had a baby. Loads of stuff. There's a rocket firing Boba Fett's been sold for $62,000, which is crazy. And Patrick Stewart and Mark Hamill have crossed the streams.
All right, let's get cracking. Shall we start with HasbroCon?
I think we probably should.
HasbroCon was the weekend just gone with lots of announcements and news for not only Star Wars, but also a lot of their other properties, Transformers, G.I. Joe, other things that I don't tend to buy.
Yeah.
But yes, they had a very well-received reveal for the next HasLab crowdfunded project, which is going to be the Razor Crest from The Mandalorian.
Yeah, it was very well received. I mean, rumours had floated about what it would be. And I think even though people might have heard whispers of it coming, I don't think anybody was quite prepared for how detailed and how cool this thing is. I mean, what did you think of it?
Looking at it, it's bonkers. It's not exactly a small vessel by any stretch of imagination. It's going to be 30 inches long, about 20 inches wide, with a good like 10 and a half, 11 inches of like height. So it's not a small vehicle by any stretch of imagination, which would explain the price tag. But the photos that they released fairly soon after the announcement, it just goes into so much detail, not only the exterior with the paneling, but also the interior of the ship. The photos that people have been seeing and sharing online, they look like 3D renders. It's not finished, but it definitely gives you an idea of what we're going to be receiving next year if we put an order in for it.
So many good bits of news tied into this. I mean, they've said that initially it needed 6,000 orders to reach its target goal, and they'd given people until November the 9th to get to 6,000 orders. Well, of course, it blew through that on Saturday. And currently, as we speak, it's whistling its way towards 8,000, which is the first stretch goal. Which they've already announced is an additional escape pod on the top of the ship. And then if they get to 10,000, there'll be another one. But the ship is incredible. Like you say, it's a huge piece of kit. It comes with a Mandalorian figure in his Beskar armor, but with a soft goods cape so he can fit into the cockpit, because that figure's already out, but with the plastic cape, and that wouldn't go in the cockpit. So they've been quite smart about thinking about that. Thankfully for UK and European collectors, it's available at Zavvi. So you cannot get that ordered. So that's available straight away. We were sort of thinking maybe we'll hear about this in a week or so. Like the barge came later. Nope. Same day. It was available on Zavvi, which was wonderful news. It's gone down like gangbusters. And I haven't really seen or heard anything negative about it. It seems very well received.
One thing that somebody said to me was they appreciate the price tag, which is set at the UK's £350 or £349 and change. But at the time when they take the money out, so Zavvi will take the money by the end of November, by I think it's the 21st of November. So whenever that crowdfunding time will elapse, and then of course it's not being delivered till next summer or autumn, aren't we?
Yeah, next autumn. Yeah, 9th of November, they'll take the money, and it is still 12 months away yet.
There was quite a few other releases this weekend. So suddenly to find an extra £350 worth of money on top of the figures, I think my friend was, well, they didn't give us much notice about that, to which I said, just get another credit card and just worry about it later.
The apocalypse is coming. Why worry about things like this?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. It doesn't matter. The most important thing is to have as much plastic stuff when we die. Yes. This is a big piece of plastic and probably other materials. It looks great. And I can't wait to see the development of this and see how many extra bits and bobs and actually what they end up in terms of backers. They've gone over 6,000 individual backers, but you can actually buy, I think it was limited to 5, but that does mean that there's a potential that when it does get released, there will be some extras floating around on the secondary market. But the price hike on that, your guess is as good as mine as to how much people will start to charge for it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I didn't get the barge. We found that had one and we gave it away as a competition. I know other sites had ones and didn't. And that's an expensive piece of kit and you've got to find somewhere for it to live. But that's fine. You know, it was a wonderful thing that they did and long awaited. And now this has come out off the back of The Mandalorian. We're 32 days away from season 2 as we speak. A little bit closer when you listen to this, which is great. It's a perfectly timed vehicle. People want stuff from The Mandalorian, but obviously they've made the commitment now to get as many 3¾ vintage collection Mandalorian figures out to go with the Razor Crest. There's a few to start it off with, but now we know there's going to be more coming. That makes all the sense. And to think when you see that vehicle, all the things that it can do, that, you know, the outsides pop off to duplicate the scene from season 2 when the Jawas sort of start taking it to bits. You fit 3 figures in the cockpit, that the weapons locker is going to be full of weapons, which is, that was exciting. The carbon freezing chambers in there, the ramp goes up and down, the landing gear come off. There's bunk areas, you know, so there's all sorts of stuff in there. You know, when you get your guys who take all the detailed, close-up detailed photographs of their action figures, when those guys get hold of this and they start taking shots, you know, inside the Razor Crest with figures in situ, I think that's just going to look incredible. The box that the sail barge came in was gorgeous. I mean, it was a big box, obviously. And I can't wait to see how big this box is going to be. Because like I say, it's 30x20x10.5 inches and it's going to be protected within that. And it'll have a packing case as well to get it to you safely.
It's going to be big, isn't it? Would you be taking this out of a box or would you be keeping this mint in the box?
Oh, I don't know. It's a tough one. I mean, I think to spend, in all honesty, to spend that kind of money on something like this, to not take it out of the box, you know, you might as well just get somebody to make you a fake box. If you're not going to take it out of the box, do you know what I mean? It's not the sort of thing I would imagine that you're ever going to sell on. So if you're cautious and careful, you can get it out and at the very least look at it. But I think this is a display piece. This to me feels very much like, if I get this, then I want people to see that I've got this. You know, the box is the box and you protect that and keep it nice and safe and tidy. But you kind of want to have this on display. That would certainly be my logic behind it. How you display it, I don't know, because it's such a good size and you'd struggle to get it inside a glass display case, like an IKEA case. It's too big for that. You know, you'd have to sit on top of it at best. You know what I mean? It's like, how do you display this to its best effect? I don't know, but I'd like to try.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm just looking at my, because most of my collection are in bully bookcases. I know a lot of people use like the detail for kind of glass cases, which are lovely, but I wonder, I haven't done the measurements. I wonder if it would fit. It would definitely fit height-wise, but I don't know if it would fit on a bookcase shelf. But if it did, then maybe with a bit of rearranging, I could probably fit one in.
I'm sure you could get inventive, couldn't you? If you could put some sort of additional sort of something on the shelf, so it, even if you had one shelf that stuck out like a landing platform or something, I'm sure you could figure something out.
You could do something. Yeah, get somebody to 3D print you, like you said, like a landing platform or something. That was the one thing that put me off the Jabba sail barge, was just not having anywhere to display it. And it's a reason why I've never collected Lego, because I'm not really a Lego builder, for one, but for two, I don't really have extra places to display these kind of items. It seems a shame, and I think it's quite sacrilegious to buy a Lego set and not have it on display. I mean, I'm sure there probably are people who have mint and box collect Lego.
I've got a few Lego sets that I would love to build, even with a big room like mine. I know I've not got the room to display them. And I mean, at some point I'm going to get shelving on the landing and such, and maybe there'd be room then, but I've already kind of got other stuff pegged for that. So yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. It just feels like something that would need to be seen. As far as the rest of Hasbro PulseCon went along, they announced a lot of other stuff, Black Series stuff, Vintage Collection stuff, new sabers. Yeah. I mean, just briefly, we'll just quickly run through it. And also check the show links, because we're going to put links to all the articles on FanthaTrax. They announced the exclusive, the Black Series Hoth Wampa, the 501st Legion ARC Trooper 3-pack, which is gorgeous and I want to get it. The Heroes of Endor set, which is in beautiful packaging. They moved on to Vintage Collection, so they're going to roll out. The first wave was Attack of the Clones Anakin photo reel, which is a great move because the figures just look that much better now. New Battle Droid from Phantom Menace. Queen Amidala in a black dress, also from Phantom Menace. TIE Fighter Pilot from Return of the Jedi. Vintage Collection Captain Rex, which looks fantastic. They've got the Incinerator Trooper from Mandalorian. And then they roll on to the Black Series.
Black Series, they've released the Phase 1 Clone Trooper, which is a new sculpt and looks better and crisper than ever before. My personal favourite, is the Jar Jar Binks. I believe that's the first Phantom Menace figure, isn't it, in the new packaging for the Black Series. Yeah. He does look nice. He's got kind of the shield and the spear. No sticky out tongue, though, which I'm a bit gutted about. Mm. They've got a Boba Fett. He comes with a removable rocket and a blown apart blaster, so you can kind of use that to recreate multiple different scenes. And from the sequel trilogy, we've also got Dark Rey from Rise of Skywalker, and she's wearing soft goods with her double-ended switchblade lightsaber, which looks cool. Mm. Speaking of a Mandalorian, Hasbro are releasing the Incinerator Trooper with a whole new paint scheme deco and flamethrower, which comes in the new packaging as well. What's quite cool is a Celebration exclusive, which is the Armorer, which is meant to debut, I think, mid-autumn or something like that. And she comes with her hammers and tongs, and she's got soft goods, and she looks awesome.
Yeah, that's a gorgeous one. And they've put it in the same packaging that they put recently put Cad Bane and Toto in, which I picked up because I thought it just looks amazing.
I missed out on that. I'm on the secondary market hunt for that one, unfortunately, but I've managed to snag myself an Armorer.
Ah, good. All right. Yeah, now that's one I'm chasing after. They've also gone back to the archive collection, so we're rolling on with the Han in Hoth, Luke in Hoth, Commander Cody, and Grand Admiral Thrawn, all photo real, so they look amazing. And then maybe the most contentious moment of the whole presentation, they've announced a new wave of Star Wars Holiday Edition figures. So there's a Snow Trooper with a Holiday Porg, a Sith Trooper with Babu Frick and a Nerf Blaster instead of his normal rifle. They've got a Clone Trooper with a candy cane weapon and an ugly Christmas sweater and a fat Porg, and then a Holiday Edition Stormtrooper with a Porg snowman, also in the sweater and the staff. And then they finish it off with, from Solo, wasn't it, the Range Trooper, dressed as Santa with a Sith Trooper sword baton and Dio looking a bit like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. So I thought they were kind of fun. To say that they didn't go down gangbusters, what do you think?
It's an understatement. Oh my gosh.
I'm throwing the hot Christmas coal at you now.
Yeah, you kind of are a little bit. I mean, they are quite possibly the most hideous and tacky Star Wars figures I think I've ever seen. And that includes the Star Wars Bendems.
Don't say that. Dave still listens to this show.
I know. We do hold those in very high regard. I mean, the thing is, in comparison, I've got the 2004 Holiday Edition Jawa figures with the Christmas packaging a couple of the other ones. And they're just done really classily. They're Star Wars characters in a holiday scene. The Yoda's dressed up as like Santa. That's a little bit different.
That's based on the Macquarie pictures, though, wasn't it?
Yeah. Exactly. That's based on Macquarie's picture. And also, again, it's done in a nice way, but they look as bad as any Star Wars Christmas holiday sweater I've ever seen. As you can tell, I'm not a huge fan of Christmas sweaters, unless it's a one from Die Hard. I mean, they're being kind of thought out, but not in a clever way. They just seem to be like, how can we force Christmas into Star Wars in the most obtuse way possible?
You know, if you're a Black Series collector and you're all up for, you know, I want more figures from this film, that film, the other film, and we all love certain films more than others. This year, it's the 40th anniversary of Empire, so everyone's got their eyes on that. But there's five slots there. There's five Black Series figures there that could be given over to something else. And I get why they've done it, because this is pitching at a broader market than just the collectors. But if you're a Black Series collector, Martin Keeler, for example, Martin collects Black Series, and he knows, love them or not, he's got to buy these if he wants to maintain that great streak of having all of them.
Yeah,
that's awkward. If you look at these and go, God, these are awful. I think they're okay. They're chintzy. I wouldn't buy them, but I kind of do see that some people, you know, Dad loves Star Wars. Let's get Dad one of these funny Stormtroopers for Christmas. You know, and you put it on your desk at work sort of thing.
That's a point that maybe I've not even thought about. It's actually the non-Star Wars collector perspective. But these are all exclusives to different stores. And over here, they're exclusives to online stores.
Yeah.
If these were hanging on shelves or pegs in Asda in December, you can totally see mums and what have you picking these up. You know, it's a great stocking stuffer for Dad. Yeah, I've just put down, £125 to pre-order these. And I don't collect the main Black Series run. I only collect convention and the exclusives in the Black Series range. And so I just went, yeah, okay, fine, I do it. But hey, if I had just done one, it might have been okay. Or two. Like maybe do like the standard TK and maybe just do the, like a Sith troop or something like that. So you're kind of ticking the Disney box by saying, hey, we're supporting your sequel trilogy, but here's something for the from the original trilogy. But to do five just seems a bit excessive. We're all complaining about it. I mean, most of us will probably pick them up. So we're not really helping. I mean, if these were still swinging on pegs come Easter, then you know, Hasbro could turn around to whoever asked them to make these, you know, just because they've been produced, that they've been produced solely and designed solely from Hasbro's offices. They could have come from Disney or something. Because in fairness, this is something that looks very similar to what you would possibly see in the parks. You know, the Disney parks, you get there, you give a holiday droids each year, don't you, for the last, I don't know, 10 years or so.
Yeah, they do Halloween stuff, don't they? And you know, they mix it up.
You could see this in a Disney park.
Yeah. They've gone back to the Force FX line. Yeah. Recently, we've had Kylo Ren, Darth Revan. We have a Darth Revan saber to review on the site, and hopefully we'll get that out this week. And the Palpatine ones, they're already out, but coming next is Ahsoka's lightsaber. It's a colour changer, blue, green, and yellow, with a crystal chamber like the others have already got. Gorgeous packaging. Having seen one of these up close, the craftsmanship on them is fantastic. So these are very, very nice. To wrap up the show, they took a final look at the mission fleet, which was kind of a lead-in to bring out Mark Boudreau, who is recently retired from Hasbro. The Mission Fleet Falcon was his last design. So talked about that and a few other things. And that was the end of the panel. But and then of course, then they revealed the Razor Crest, which we are rather stoked about. So a bit of a mixed bag, but I would say for the most part, that was pretty good reveals. The exclusives are nice.
Pretty well.
They've served Vintage and Black Series pretty well. Ahsoka fans are going to love that saber.
Exactly.
And if you like Christmas, then you've got five figures to buy.
Fantatrax.
So congratulations are in order to Billy Lord, who has just the other day announced that she has given birth to a lovely baby boy and named him Kingston Fisher Lord Rydell. This was quite a surprise to, I think, most people who didn't actually know that she was pregnant. And you can follow Billy's adventures in motherhood on Instagram, where you can see some lovely photos of her and her new family.
Yeah, it was good news, wasn't it? It was nice news. And I think it came on the same day as Mark Hamill's birthday as well, which was kind of nice. It's just a sad thought. I mean, in the article we put on the site, which will be in the show links again, the first line was Princess General Grandmother, which basically is referring to Carrie because, you know, she'd have still been with us, which she should be. Carrie Fisher would now be a grandma, which I think she would have found hilarious personally. I think that would have been quite fun to follow her journey then as a grandma. It wasn't meant to be, sadly. But yeah, no, it's nice news. Obviously, Billy's now very much a part of the Star Wars galaxy. So good news all round. And also, whilst we're on that, happy birthday to Mark Hamill for this week.
Mark Hamill's looking great for his age. And he recently starred in a crossover commercial with Star Trek's Patrick Stewart, which is really fun and slightly bizarre just to see them in the same screen at the same time.
The thing I liked about that, as much as the fact that it's Mark Hamill and it's Patrick Stewart, is that in the last sort of 5 years, Mark Hamill has come back to Star Wars, returning to the role of Luke, and done all the things he did in the sequel trilogy, and he's back on the scene and loving it. And it's been great for him and his career and all of that, you know, which has been wonderful. And then Patrick Stewart went away and did all the other stuff he did, most notably Professor X in the X-Men films, wraps that up with Logan in 2017, I think it was. He comes back to play Picard in the TV series. So now you've got these two guys who've played iconic roles from the 70s and 80s back in the boots of those characters. And then you bring them together for an ad like this, which was just, you know, obviously they're playing off Hamill's American, Stewart's English. So it's, you know, they're like the little teaser trailer was tomato, 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 that little thing. They were interviewed and Patrick Stewart basically said, oh, wouldn't it be great if they did a Star Wars and Star Trek crossover? What do you think about that? Do you think that there would ever be a scenario where, in continuity, do you think they could do it, or do you think they should do it? Or do you think it's something they could do just as a bit of fun? Like Star Trek does the comics where they've had the Transformers crossover and the Doctor Who crossover, and it's just an X-Men and an X-Men one. You know, just a bit of fun. Do you think that's where it should sit?
Yeah, definitely fun only, I think. Because I guess it's that whole thing of like Star Trek is still very much Earthbound and it's heavily more science fiction and it's in the future. And Star Wars is meant to be set a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Now, obviously, you only need a wormhole just to get from the Delta Quadrant to the Alpha Quadrant and vice versa. That would possibly, for some people, maybe be that step too far. But I would be interested to see what would happen. Right now, I can't even imagine like a scenario. Who would you have? Would you have a Next Generation cast?
I don't know. It would certainly be fun, but it does feel more like a Saturday Night Live sketch to me.
Yes.
You know, or if they kept on doing the Family Guy Star Wars, you know, that's where they would have got to eventually, because Seth MacFarlane loves Trek and he loves Star Wars. So, you know, they would have done something there. And it's a bit like the conversation we had last week about Detours and Lower Decks. And I think it would work in a scenario like that. But as an actual, proper, serious Star Wars meeting Star Trek, I don't think it would work at all. The reason those comics work, you know, having Doctor Who, I think it was the Matt Smith Doctor Who, turn up in a comic with the Next Generation characters, worked fine because Doctor Who's a time traveler and time travel's a part of Star Trek. So of those sort of franchises, within the boundaries of the sort of the scope of those shows, it is kind of feasible that Doctor Who would go to the 23rd, 24th century, and one of the realities would be the Star Trek reality. And so he could actually interact with those characters. So there's some sort of logic, as much as these things need logic. None of them really need logic. You can just do it. But Star Wars is Star Wars. I don't think anything else that isn't Star Wars should encroach upon Star Wars. And I don't think time travel should ever be part of Star Wars either. I think that just unravels the whole damn thing.
When Star Wars gets a little bit too steeped in technology and science fiction, it kind of loses its vibe a little bit. Let's be fair, as fans, we do want to know how the Death Star works and we want to know the inner workings of everything and hyperdrive and stuff. But that's better off suited to reference books and stuff like that. When it's in an actual story, in a novel, sometimes it can really feel a bit out of place. And conversely, I don't think Star Trek does religion very well. Star Wars has that, because of the Jedi and the Force, has that whole kind of metaphysical belief system that I think would be very hard for people to work with in Star Trek. Like I said, I could probably see the Next Gen cast or something like that, maybe because of Q's had something to do with it, kind of like sends them off to observe, I don't know, the Battle of Endor or something random like that.
With Star Wars, the continuity and the timeline and all that sort of stuff, should there be one consistent continuity? And then, but by the side of that, does it work to have Elseworlds type, as DC would call it, or a what if it was Marvel, or a Infinities, as Dark Horse used to call it, you know, sort of a side version of Star Wars? Can you have the comedy stuff? Or right now, I think Disney and Lucasfilm probably want to keep focused on the big picture, you know, and stay narrow in that sense, you know, because they want to make sure they get it right. The one thing I like about Star Trek at the moment is that they seem very confident, and there's a swagger about them, and everything they're doing seems to be working. And then they've got the confidence to do something like Lower Decks and not think we're taking a mickey out of our fandom here. Whereas I feel that Star Wars at the moment is a bit directionless. If Detours was now like Lower Decks is now, I think some elements of the fandom would just think they're just taking the mick out of us now. It's not got the swagger that Trek's got at the moment, which is weird because they do sort of yin and yang sometimes, the two franchises. They have their ups and downs. Not that Star Wars is on a down, it's financially doing great. Look at all the product we've just talked about. Everything's, you know, all the things that are on the horizon, the shows that are coming. But Trek seems very secure and confident. I don't think Star Wars is to that level at the moment. So I think something like this would be fun, but I just think it would get ripped to shreds at the moment.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, I think like stuff like the Dark Horse Infinities is a great strand to have. Just what, you know, what if Luke didn't blow up a Death Star, or Luke made friends with a Wumpa?
love that
But if you can keep it clearly delineated, that's fine. It's if things start to blur, then you can see that. I mean, I can remember they spent a long time, or it felt like they had to spend a long time explaining to the fandom that the Freemaker's Adventure was canon adjacent. It's a real clunky way of saying it's not actually canon.
Yeah.
In its own little unique universe, that worked really well.
Yeah.
So there's examples that you could say, well, it can be done, but it's how you do it. And I think Star Trek is on the up, but then like 5 years ago, it wasn't. And if they brought out Lower Decks, then I think it would tank. But for some reason, and probably mainly because of Picard, I would like to think it's on its way up. And also Discovery, because Discovery is pretty cool as well. But then, for instance, I'm going back and I'm just near the end of season 7 of Next Generation, and I've had a great time watching that. And I guess there's a little bit of nostalgia in there as well. I think a lot of these franchises are haven't seen what Star Wars did with The Force Awakens, are probably turning to look inwards and kind of go, how can we play on this nostalgia factor of a fan base we've already got in a way that we can create new content and bring in new fans at the same time?
You're listening to Fantatrax. Flip through the galaxy of literature with Cannon Fodder hosts Ryan Cameron, Matt Booker, Mark Newbold, and Mark Mocaster.
Count me in.
Spin round the rim with Desert Planet Discs, your musical journey through the space lanes with your hosts, Carl Bayless and Greg Robertson.
The hottest tunes this side of Mos Eisley. Hot dang!
Get the latest news, interviews, reviews, and much more on Making Tracks with your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mocaster.
Like an Ewok battle wagon out of control.
Join hosts Claire Henry and a rotating panel of guest hosts for the podcast that's full of hope.
Hope.
planet Leia.
I love you.
I know.
It's time to head south with the Fantha from Down Under, Adam O'Brien.
Oh, g'day, mate. How you going?
Start your engines with Paul Naylor and Mark Newbold as they lift the hood on starships, airspeeders, swoops, capital ships, and more from across the cosmos. And for everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
It's a tricky balance, isn't it? I mean, nostalgia is such a key element to Star Wars and Star Trek. Talking of nostalgia, Rocket Firing Boba Fett has just sold for $62,000 at an auction. Incredible, incredible numbers for a figure that we all know very well. But this particular one never came out as a figure that you could purchase. These are sort of early versions of sort of prototypes, basically. Mega rare. I think they only made sort of 10 or 12 of them. And if you know anything about these things, which I know a little bit, not to any great detail, Richard Hutchinson is the guy on our site on Fantha that knows this detail. There's the L slot and the J slot. This is an L slot. Yeah, just crazy, crazy money. But the point being, in relation to this particular news piece, nostalgia sells. You know, if Boba Fett wasn't such an iconic character in the zeitgeist, I've just written an article for Starburst magazine about the holiday special, and the focus of the article was about Boba Fett. Obviously, you had the holiday special come out, and it is what it is, and it's goofy and silly. But the sweet spot of that whole episode, that two-hour thing, was the story of the faithful Wookiee, the animated thing. From that comes Boba Fett, and then they roll him out in San Anselmo at the parade. First public appearance, and then the figure comes out, you can mail away, and then Empire Strikes Back comes out, you know? So they've teed up the public for this character that's still, I just wrote the review for Bounty Hunters issue 4, which just hit the site. And the final panel is Boba Fett walking into a room with Valance and he guns somebody down. And it's like,
yeah,
only Boba Fett can get away with that sort of stuff as a character. You know, it means something. It's like back in the 80s, Wolverine versus Sabretooth. Any Marvel fan of that era who read Uncanny X-Men in the mid-80s will remember very well what a big deal it was when Sabretooth turned up. It was iconic stuff. Boba Fett's kind of kept that going to lesser or greater degree over the years, and now he's coming back in. We talked about it the other day about Altamira Morrison. It looks like he's playing Boba in season 2 Mando. And point being, Boba Fett is nostalgia. He's a character from the 70s that's relevant right now. With Star Trek, that's the same. Picard coming back, massive nostalgia. You're watching season 7 Next Gen. You know, it's not the best season of Next Gen. There's some good stuff in it. You know, 3, 4, 5, and 6 are pretty consistently high. 7 dips a bit, but then you've got All Good Things coming, which is the greatest final episode of any TV show ever, in my personal opinion. But the point being is that both those shows trade heavily on nostalgia. And this is where this weird sort of cult of people criticizing things because it's, inverted commas, fan service. And it's like, without the fans, you are literally shouting into an empty room. It's not fan service. What does that even mean? What fan? It's only one person's opinion. So what fan? I've never understood that. That was a criticism laid at the Rise of Skywalker. Too much fan service. Says who?
When you're trying to kind of sew up and tie together three trilogies from 40 years, how can you avoid quote unquote fan service? By its very nature, you need to have touchstones to the original trilogy, to the prequel trilogy. I know sometimes some people kind of feel it when it's a bit too obvious. One example that always leaped out to me was in Force Awakens, when Finn is repairing Chewbacca after he's been shot and he's going through like a bag or something or a box and he pulls out the training remote. That momentary pause in front of a camera and then he chucks it. That's as close as I would say is fan service.
Yeah.
Oh, look what I've got. And then he throws it. Whereas I think if he had just kind of picked it up and threw it slightly quicker. But that was just me. You know, that was my personal thing. But then chapter 5 of The Mandalorian, I just kind of like, I was all in. I just thought it was great. So I didn't really have a problem with that one.
Yeah, totally get that. It's weird. That was the one episode that wasn't nominated for an Emmy. That's the one that I probably got the biggest pop out of. Again, that's Star Wars and Star Trek, isn't it? You know, I know we're slightly going away from the original topic, but Trek has done it very, very well. I mean, Picard got a lot of criticism because people said it was too dark. And Star Trek is all about optimism and so on and so forth. And I think these days, 2020, if you do a show that is upbeat and happy and bright and light, people go, oh, it's too twee. Look at them. They're all happy. And, oh, look at the happy ending. It doesn't work. Whereas Picard was a bit more like watching Black Mirror. in places. You know, it was like, whoa, that's quite grim. But the thing with Picard as well is that, okay, this is what we have 10 episodes and we've got season 2 coming, sequential episodes. So they're following on. They're not self-contained little adventures like apparently Strange New Worlds is going to be. Star Wars will kind of be the same. I think, you know, Mandalorian season 1 was like, it was an ongoing storyline. And he kind of had little, almost like side adventures, which is, you know, the Gunslinger was kind of a side adventure, wasn't it? Going to Tatooine. He wasn't there for any other reason than to get his ship fixed. And almost like episode 2 sort of felt a little bit like that with the egg. But it worked. Yeah. But it's nostalgia. You're absolutely right. That scene in Force Awakens was way more on the nose than anything in The Mandalorian, when it was just, oh, look, there's a pit droid. It wasn't a pit droid waving at the camera, sticking his thumbs up. You were just there. It's like, well, what else are you going to see? You know, it's like going to New York and going, oh, look, the Empire State Building. It's like, what else are you going to expect to see in New York? Of course, it's there. It's just there, isn't it?
Exactly. And it's the whole logic, isn't it, of if you land in Mos Eisley, you're probably going to go to Mos Eisley Cantina, because I think that's the only cantina, pretty much, that we know of.
I'd have to pull out my old West End maps, you know. I think there might be another one, but I'm pretty sure that's the main one. Chalmers is the main one.
Definitely, yeah. There may be a restaurant or like a Starbucks or something. Yeah. But sorry, Battlestar Galactica.
Very good.
I can understand, you know, with Chapter 5, there was a couple of complaints because, I can't remember his name, but the Gunslinger, let's say, he was sat at the table where Han met Greedo.
Now, oh, Toro Calican, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. It just rolls off the tongue.
Yeah.
Yes, arguably he could have been sat anywhere else in that bar, but then I think that's just a bit of kind of like happenstance, really, a bit of serendipity in the grand scheme of things. It's not.
True.
It doesn't necessarily pull me out of it. I mean, okay, if, for instance, there was a big blaster burn above his head in the wall, then maybe, because I'd like to think that those droids probably would have redecorated after they got rid of Chalmun and Uhura and that. So.
But that character, Calican, who's come under for such derision, to me, I think he was such a wannabe, and he was way savvier than he let on, but I think he was such a wannabe, he probably knew. There was probably some weird galactic history where they knew that was the booth that Han Solo sat in, you know what I mean? Oh, that's where Greedo died. Oh, how did Greedo die? Han Solo shot him. Oh, well, that booth. Yeah, that booth. I think it's the sort of thing that those people would kind of know. In a galaxy where Dr. Aphra can walk into literally any room and everybody knows who she is, and yet nobody remembers the Jedi like 25 years after the fall of the Republic. I think it's sort of a story convenient omission almost.
With Aphra, it totally is, because it's just story convenience, isn't it? You know, to get that. And it's amazing for somebody who is relatively young to have such a reputation. Now, I could understand by The Force Awakens, you have Kanji Club and you have Guava Death Gang, and everybody knows that Han Solo will try and get out of his deals and will kind of screw you over. That kind of thing takes time to build up. You can kind of get that young Chilly Aphra just to kind of wander into like another cantina and everybody like knows her. Yeah. I guess that's for the convenience of comic books. There's a certain level of instantaneous message.
Yeah,
you need to get across.
Yeah.
It is, totally, yeah. So I don't tend to take that stuff too for granted in the grand scheme of things.
I don't think it would work. I think it'd be fun.
Yeah.
I think, though, that it's a bit like when, and we talked a lot about Trek today, and I don't mean to because we're not a Trek show, but when they were trying to come up with the idea for what ended up being Generations, what they wanted to do was pit the Enterprise A crew against the Enterprise D crew, and they realised they couldn't do it because one of the two crews would come off as the bad guys. And that wasn't fair. It was the launch of the next gen on the big screen, but it was also the final hurrah, or would have been, of the original crew. And they didn't want them going out on a loss. It's not wrestling, you know. In wrestling, you go out on a loss. That's tradition, but not in film. So they couldn't quite work up a storyline that satisfied both camps. And so they trimmed it right back. So it was basically Kirk and Picard. That was fine. But I think if you do Star Wars versus Star Trek, because we as a fandom can be so granular in the sense of, like you said, you know, I don't need to know how a lightsaber works. I know a crystal goes in, a kyber crystal goes in, and there's a, you know, focusing crystal and blah, 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 whatever else there is. Don't really need to know the details of it. Star Trek fans love to know how phasers work because, like you just said, we, Star Wars, are space fantasy. Star Trek is science fiction. So it is a different perspective on the same thing. But if you've suddenly got, you know, the Enterprise D going up against the Star Destroyer, there will be conniptions on both sides. Well, a Star Destroyer could take out the Enterprise. And then the Trek fans would go, oh, there's no way a Star Destroyer could take out the Enterprise. Look at the weaponry. And it would just get silly. And there was plenty of enmity between the two in the 70s and 80s, for goodness sake. That was always the big, you still get it now. Are you a Star Wars fan or a Star Trek fan? Well, I actually love them both. Thanks very much. You can't like them both. Why can't I like them both?
Which I've never understood. When I was a teenager, Trek was kind of like my day-to-day fix for something similar to Star Wars, because you get home from school, you can't always watch Star Wars as much as we want to. But surely a Star Destroyer would have the Enterprise, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but I wouldn't want to have that argument with a starship.
It's the whole thing, all you need to do is create an inverse tachyon field, and then you force a subspace phase-induced high-energy beam into the middle of the Star Destroyer's bridge, and then it's done with.
You could do that. You could envelop the Star Destroyer in a static warp shell that's eroding, and then eventually they just wink out of existence. Yeah. That would also do it.
If you would like to send us a message, send us a tweet, send us a review, or anything else about Star Wars and how Star Wars is totally better than Star Trek, you can do that, and Mark is going to tell you how you can get in contact with us.
I am. Well, if you want to be part of the action, stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, not Star Trek news, I'm afraid, but Star Wars news, visit fanthatrax.com or check out the Fanthatrax app through the App Store. Follow us on your mobile device. Please download it. It's a really, I'm going to say that, of course, but it is a really good app, and you will get all the news, all the alerts you need. You can reach out to us and send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@fanthatrax.com. So last episode, we had a listeners' question. We'd love some more. We've got none in the bag, so we could do with some more. So send in your questions and we'll read them out. Comment, like, and share on any of our social media feeds at Fanthatrax. And be sure to subscribe, leave a review. Please leave a 5-star one on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Semple for composing the Fanthatrax intro, Adam O'Brien for our making tracks opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers.
Yeah, and if you want to send us a tweet personally or follow us on either Twitter or Instagram, Mark is Prefect Simon on Twitter and Instagram, and I am M Mulcaster on both Instagram and Twitter. Take care, and we'll see you at the next episode.
We'll see you next week.
Coming up next on Fanthatrax Radio, it's another episode of Making Tracks.